We're in the middle of the Memches Devarim, the 48 things that Torah is acquired with in the sixth parak of Avos. And the list includes Va'oise Siyog L'Dvarav, one who makes fences for his words. Ve'nu Machzik Tov La'atzmo, he doesn't congratulate himself. He doesn't pat himself on the back. Doesn't think he's made some great accomplishments. Ahuv, beloved, Oyev Esei Makom, loves Ribbono Shloilem, Oyev Esei Brios, loves people, Oyev Esei Tzedakos, loves charity, Oyev Esei Meshorim, loves honesty and integrity, Oyev Esei Tochachos, loves rebukes, Umisrachik Min HaKavo, distances himself from honor. V'lo Megis Libo B'Talmudo, he does not get arrogant in his learning, V'ena Semech B'Hara, he doesn't enjoy the times when he decides or instructs people in halacha, nosei ba'om chavero, and he has empathy with others. Machriyo l'chav sechus, he looks at him and inclines for the, gives him the benefit of the doubt. Ma'amidu ala emes, and stands him up on what's true. Ma'amidu ala shalom, and stands him up on what's peaceful. Mesiashiv li b'tamudo, and he allows his learning to settle. Shol u'meshiv, he asks and answers. Shomei Moisef, he listens and adds. Halomeid amas lalamed, he learns in order to teach. Halomeid amas lasos, he learns in order to do. Hamachim es rabo, he'll ask questions that make his rebbe, his master, understand better. Hamachav neshmoso, he clearly understands what he learns. Va'omer davar shem omro, and he repeats in the name of the one who said it. Talamarat, we learn. Whoever says in the name of the one who said it, maybe Gula Olam will bring redemption to the world. Like it says, that Esther quoted Mordechai to Achashverosh. So this list is a little bit in my mind a contrast to a list we did last week. Last week we discussed things that have to be minimized. Miut schreiber, miut derchertz, miut tainuk, miut shena, miut sicha, miut schoik. Things that will interfere with learning and have to be minimized. Not eliminated, but minimized. Here we have a list of things he loves. Oyevis emakom, oyevis ebius, oyevis estakas, oyevis emesharim, oyevis dechachas, and so on. There are things you stay away from and the things that you embrace. So we talked last week about things to stay away from, like kind of the sur meira, if you will, things that will interfere with his learning, and now things that he should embrace that will help his learning. Oyevis hamakom, oyevis habius. So I would understand oyevis hamakom. So he loves the Kadosh Baruch Hu. So that ties into Torah, because learning Torah is an expression of Avas Hashem. We've talked about that. You want to understand the Kaddish Baruch Hu, you love a Kaddish Baruch Hu, and I know a Kaddish Baruch Hu, so you learn. Oyevis Abios, where does loving people have to do with learning Torah? Why is Oyevis Abios part of Devarim SheTorah Niknas Behem? And Oyevis HaTzedakos, he loves charity. I'm assuming it doesn't mean receiving, it refers to giving. He wants to give charity. Oyevis HaMeisharim, Erlichkeit. So those are important things for everybody. How does that tie into Kinyan for Torah? If a person loves HaKadosh Baruch Hu and learns Torah as an expression of Avas Hashem, and this is understanding HaKadosh Baruch Hu's world, another way of saying it is, if you love HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you want to know everything you can about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If you love a person, you want to know about that person. So if you love HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you want to know about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I would assume, perhaps, that emulating HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to be part of this. We have a concept of Halach Tebedrachov, to follow in Hashem's ways. Hashem is Gomel Chesed. The things that Kadosh Baruch Hu does, we are supposed to emulate in our interactions with other people. So perhaps Oyevus HaBrios, Oyevus HaZadokos, Oyevus HaMeshorim is an extension of emulating HaKadosh Baruch Hu's ways. That this is our trying to be like Hashem. Perhaps the attempt to emulate HaKadosh Baruch Hu's midos in conduct of other people is relevant to acquiring Torah because it's an extension of Oyeves HaMakom. Or perhaps we could take it a step further. Learning Torah, we've explained, is not like any subject material that you learn. It's not just a subject that you master where it's a matter of your intellect, and that's what counts towards acquiring the material. Learning Torah is intended to elevate the person, to make the person better, to make the person more thoughtful. If a person learns Torah and does not have proper midos, it's a terrible chil Hashem. It's a terrible thing, the Gemara says. Oy, what are people going to say? Look at this guy. He learned Torah. This is how he behaves. This is how he talks. This is how he acts. This is how he deals in business. I'm not sending my kid to learn Torah. It's a terrible chil Hashem. So, if you're not Oyevus HaBrios, you're not Oyevus HaZadok, you're not Oyevus HaMeisharim, and you're going to learn Torah, so what's going to happen? You're going to be a Torah scholar who people look down upon? So perhaps it interferes with your ability to acquire Torah on a spiritual level because such a person shouldn't have Torah. We don't want such a person to be a master of Torah because in his conduct with people, he doesn't live up to the standard that we would anticipate and expect from a Talmid Chacham. So perhaps it interferes with his ability to learn. Simple, if his midos are not what they should be. This is a spiritual thing. This is not a normal intellectual concern. This is a ruchnius thing. If he's not Oyevus HaBrios, if he's not Oyevus HaZadokos, not Oyevus HaMeisharim, Torah doesn't want him. Torah doesn't want this person because he's going to make a chil Hashem. His business dealings won't be emistic, and he's not going to be a charitable person. He's going to be a tightwad, and he's not going to be nice to people. If he's missing these midos, that's the person that should be a Torah scholar. So therefore, these are contrary to acquiring Torah. Now, we know that there were different ways of dealing with people among the Tanoim. The Gemara contrasts Shammai and Hillel, how Shammai seemingly was impatient and would not deal with people who came to him and said, like, teach me called Tarkula when you're standing on one foot. He chased them away, get out of here. He went to Hillel and said, okay, Madloch Sari Lechavach Hasavit. You don't like it, don't do it to somebody else. That's called Tarkula. Everything else is perish, go and I'll learn something. Hillel was much more patient and would deal with these nudniks, if you will. And Shammai would have nothing to do with them. And the Gemara gives a list of similar kind of things. Make me a ger, I'm an ast, I'll be kohen gadol. So threw him away, kohen gadol. You'll never be kohen gadol no matter what. He's a goy. Get out of here. And he says, sure, I'm a guy. And then as he's teaching him, he came across that you can't be a kohen gadol once you're a ger. So Gemara gives a list of these kind of things. So it would seem that Shammai had a harsh personality, a harsh demeanor. And how do you reconcile that with the requirements? He was a tremendous Torah scholar, Oyevus HaBrios, Oyevus HaZadokos, Oyevus HaMeisharim. It happens to be that Shammai is the one who said, HaMekabel Es Kol Adam V'Seiv Panim Yafos. Always greet people with a smile. So Rav Salanter says in a very well-known piece that don't make the mistake and think that Hillel was a sweet man and Shammai was a curmudgeon. If Shammai behaved a certain way it's because he held this is how he's supposed to behave. He was just as sweet as hill. But he felt, for the covet of Torah, you don't come and say, teach me kol Torah kulo on regal achas, and if you don't respond harshly, then you are being mevaz at Torah. So he needs a little rebuke and tell him, get out of here. What kind of nonsense is that? And similarly with the other cases of the Gemara. These were not personality flaws of Shammai. These were decisions that he made that this is how I'm supposed to respond due to the understanding of what Torah is and the cover they give for Torah. So a certain amount is expected. I think sometimes you could look at it in more recent times with the great machlokes between the Musar of Nevardik and the Musar of Slobodka. Both Nevardik and Slobodka have their roots with the Talmid and Rosh Salanter. And the Alter of Slobodka was a tremendous Bal Musar, just like the Alter of Nevardik was. But they had very different approaches to how you should teach your students and how to behave. The way I was taught in Slobodka, the theme was Chaviv Adam Shenivah B'Tselem, Chibi Yaseira for Klai Yisrael, they're given the Torah. You're very special. People are special. Yidden are special. Behave special. Put them up on a pedestal. And they dressed nice, and they behaved like royalty, because they were. This is aristocracy. And that was the Mahalach of Slobodka, Kavod HaTorah. Nevardik focused on the Mishnah, look at three things, and you won't do a chet. Where did you come from? Where are you going? Who's going to judge you? And therefore, their attitude was, I'm nothing, ich bin garnished. A subtle self-effacement, an extremely different approach to life. Whereas Slobodka put themselves on a pedestal, Nevardik dug themselves a hole in the ground, so to speak. They're like, we're nothing. Two different approaches. These are shita. Each one could have held the other way. This is how they determined was the best way to approach life, how to, behavior, modification, so on. And they worked on it. They disagreed. It happens to be that even though in its time the Nevardik had a tremendous network of yeshivas throughout Europe before World War II, Slobodka is the one that survived. The Alter of Slobodka's students became the Rosh Yeshivas of all the great yeshivas, whether it was Demir, or Chaim Berlin, or Lakewood, or Baltimore and Israel, or Tar V'Das. These were all Talmidim of Alter Slobodka. Ultimately, his Talmidim became the great Rosh Yeshivas of the next generations. And from the Nevardik, there was a very small lingering group that survived that. And there's a Nevardik Yeshiva, there's in New York, there's in Eretz Yisrael. Doesn't have the popularity of the Slobodka descendants. So when it comes to Gedolei Yisrael, many Gedolei Yisrael today that we look up to are the Hillel-type Gedolim, the kind that will greet you with a smile and make you feel good. But there was still a remnant of the Nevardik school, or the Shammai school, if you will. And they didn't put up with nonsense and would not tolerate what they felt was a lack of Kavod HaTorah. And if you're not used to that, it could be very difficult. The Stipler Goyen, Reb Chaim Kinevsky's father, he was a student of Nevardik, and he lived that way. I don't think you'll ever see a picture of him smiling. Every photograph of him is not quite scowling, but definitely with a very severe look, very serious countenance. And I know someone who went into him, and he got screamed at because his yarmulke wasn't big enough. Hey, for a kippah, where's your yarmulke? I have a yarmulke. That's not a kippah. Get out. Threw him out. So what was that? What is that? Throwing out a fellow who came to see him with a tiny yarmulke. He felt that's not kavod HaTorah. you come into a rav, you dress, you put on a yarmulke, a nice yarmulke, not a tiny little bottle cap, whatever it was. I don't know how big it was, but it was clear he felt that this was not proper. And he didn't hesitate to tell him, get out of my yard, goodbye. Goodbye. Now the fellow was not very pleased. He didn't understand almost what was happening. He was just thrown out of the rav. But it happens to be that by the stipler, this was, people were afraid to go in. You would say to him, like, waiting in the anteroom. He was a scary personage, but he had Ruach HaKodesh. He was a Kadosh, a holy, holy person. You know, stories about him are legend. He saw things, he knew things. But he was very severe. He was very severe. And he was a true student of Navardic. He went through the Navardic system in Europe. People are much more comfortable with, you know, Rabbi Shlomo Zalman Auerbach type, who was not at all like that. Always with a smile, always with a nice word to make you feel good. It's a whole different approach. It's not a question of who's right, who's wrong. It's like an Eilev Eilev Devei Lekim Chayim. There are different approaches. Different approaches. So even though the requirements of Kinyan Torah include Oyeves Abrius, Oyeves Tzedakas, Oyeves Mesharim, there still will be great people who feel this is the correct Mahalach, and therefore this is how they're going to behave based on this. This is the proper code of conduct. And it doesn't always appeal to everyone. You have to almost like know what you're getting into before you go. Even Reb Chaim, who generally people come now, I mean, he's inundated with people coming for brachas, and he does very briefly, will give a bracha, but he doesn't get fazed by someone's upset with him or what he says. There's a story of a fellow who came for bracha for a shidduch. And this is evidently has happened more than once. Reb Chaim told him, you have to grow a beard. You grow a beard, you get a shidduch. And he was not happy with that answer. And he said, I'll do anything. Anything, not that. Reb Chaim said, if you don't grow a beard, you'll be single till your dying day. And the guy starts to cry. And the grandson of the Sasaba, he's crying. And Reb Chaim said, he can cry. He can cry. It's not going to hurt him to cry. But he has to grow a beard. If he doesn't grow a beard, he's not going to get married. So again, what is that? He was saying it like it is. In his, whatever koich that is, Ruach HaKodesh, let's say, he knows he needs to grow a beard. So what's he going to do? The fellow's crying. So that doesn't change anything. It didn't faze him. I'm sure for some other people, it'd be very fazed by that. You know? He's got to grow a beard. That's what he's got to do. And I've come across other people who've also had a similar experience, and they didn't cry about it. They just didn't grow a beard and then find the right girl, and then they grew a beard, and next thing you know, they got engaged. So I think part of the idea is if you go to someone like Reb Chaim for bracha, you have to be ready to accept what he says. If you don't want to go, don't go. You don't have to go. But if you go and he tells you something, you kind of got to listen. So that's part of it. We love to go and just be told everything be great, everything be fine, don't worry, everything's wonderful. But someone on his level says, this is what you need to do. And if he says it, there's no other way around that. It's not a chisaron in his avas abrius, it's not a chisaron in his bein adam l'chavero. He's telling him like it is. He's not happy. What's he to do? He's not happy. So that's what he got to do. And people don't have to go. No, they don't have to go. They don't have to go to him. This is a separate question, going to Gedolim. I'm always troubled by the idea of going to a Gadol. It's disturbing him. He's got things to do, he wants to learn, he wants to do this. Why am I bothering him? And I often hesitate to go unless I have an important reason to go or I have some kind of connection. And later I saw in a biography of Pam Zichron Avacha the same thing he wrote. He doesn't like going to Gedolim because he bothered. Why bother them? I'll gain from the visit, but the Gadol won't gain from the visit, so why should I go to him? Just to take his time. So, you know, it all depends on your attitude as well. perhaps the problem is a lot of us think going to a gadol is like, you know, you go to a bracha machine. You say, oh, you get a bracha, everything's fine. It's not so simple. Not so simple. Anyways, the bottom line is these midos are necessary for Kinyan Torah, and all great Torah scholars have these midos, but in their hanhaga of Ben Adam Chavero, sometimes they hold b'shita, there's a certain conduct that is warranted, then there's different approaches and how that works. Just like I said with Shaman Hill, Nevalach Sobotka. So we find there's these different approaches to Kavra Bias, Kavra Torah, and so on, and what is the proper method. But it's an Eilu V'Eilu Divir L'Kamchayim. Oyev is a Tochachas is the one part that I'm a little troubled with, because all the others fit into our concept of Ahava. We're always taught Ahava means to give, from the Shavish of Hav, to give. If you love someone, you give to them. That's how you create love, you give. So we give of ourselves to Kadosh Baruch Hu, we give of ourselves to people, we give charity, we give for the sake of honesty and integrity. What does it mean, we love to give Musar? That's not the Pshat. Ayavis Techocha says receiving Techocha, that we enjoy receiving. So that's not giving anything. That's the more classic Ahava, that I love something because I enjoy it for myself. And that's Ayavis Techocha. A person has to be in a position where they are ready to receive criticism, ready to receive rebuke, to recognize the value of someone else's criticism, the value of that rebuke. We get very defensive when people tell us something. We get very defensive when people say we're doing something wrong. And if you understand the value of it and the importance of it, then we shouldn't be defensive. We should, thank you so much for telling me. Thank you for pointing it out to me. Thank you for, I wasn't aware. I really appreciate you letting me know. That's really how you're supposed to respond. It could take a lot of working on yourself to come to that. But that is really how we're supposed to respond. We shouldn't be defensive. We should listen and maybe bite our tongue if necessary and then come to the realization that we should say thank you. Thank you for letting me know. Thank you for pointing it out to me. I will check into that. I will see what I can do about it. Whatever. I think that is a very important life skill, essentially, to be able to accept criticism. If you can't accept criticism, then you're going to go on with your follies. You'll make mistakes and do things wrong. You'll never get yourself straightened out. It's not easy, but it's an important skill to be oyeves techachos. You know, if someone is about to eat a food and someone told them, you know, I don't know, you heard there was a recall on that item because of poisoning, listeria, salmonella, whatever, E. coli, you would take offense, you'd get defensive, say, oh, thank you so much, I'm about to eat it, thank you, save me, could have gotten sick, could have gone to the hospital, who knows what could have happened. You'd be very appreciative if they tell you that that product was unhealthy for you to eat. If the same person says, you know, that food you're going to eat, the heksher, is not so great, I'm not so sure that's, you should be eating that item. What do you mean? What are you looking at my food? Heksher, none of your business. Same thing. It's the same thing. You have to appreciate that what they're telling you is for your own good, so to speak. There are different ways to give techacha. That's for sure. There are different methods of giving techacha. You're not supposed to embarrass someone to give techacha. It should be done in private. And the one giving the techacha, which represents the hardest, has to be innocent of the thing himself. Someone who's guilty of it can't give someone else musar. I remember, I guess it's a terrible story. My daughter, one of my girls, tells me how she had this issue with this teacher. I guess it had to come out because of she didn't want to go to school. I don't know what it was. The teacher was giving a talk. This is before high school, middle school. A talk about tznius. And evidently my daughter was rolling her eyes. And the teacher said, why aren't you makabel for me? Why aren't you listening to me? She didn't want to say. you have to tell them. This is going on like 20 minutes into lunch. Why don't you accept what I'm saying? Why don't you this and that? And finally my daughter said, because you're not sneeze. So that was a conversation stopper, this little 5th, 6th, 7th grader telling the teacher that she's not sneeze. And at least from my daughter's perspective, the teacher wasn't. You can't accept hochacha from someone who's not doing it themselves. If someone's teaching you tznius, they better be tznius. If someone's teaching you kashrus, they better keep kosher. If someone's telling you about shmiras haloshen, they better not speak loshen hara, whatever it is. If they come over to tell you, by the way, you know this and this and this, you can't do that if you yourself are guilty of the same thing. So that's a lot of problem we have with tochacha, that we feel the person who's giving, and perhaps that's why we can't give tochacha, because who's perfect anymore? No one's perfect. So that's a problem with giving tochacha. You may have heard speakers, and I definitely have, who get up and say, listen, I can't give anyone here musa. I'm giving this for myself. I'm talking to myself. You can listen in. And then they'll give a musa shmus. There was a big tzaddik. His name was Mordechai Schwab. He's a brother to Shimon Schwab. If Mordechai Schwab, his face really shone. He had a hadas panim. His face shone. I used to hear musa shmus from every other week when I was in yeshiva in New Jersey. And it was very disconcerting. He never looked at anybody. He looked up like this. His eyes were on the ceiling. And like the first time, we asked someone, like, what's he doing? He's not looking at anyone. He says he'll never look at someone who gives them musa shmus. He doesn't want anyone to think he's talking to them. So he looks up. Now, if you tell me there's a room full of girls, he doesn't look at girls. Went to Novominska. Were you there? Too young for that? When Novominska came to Detroit, spoke at a Bissau convention. You don't remember that. Okay, so he once came to Detroit, spoke at a Bissau convention. He didn't look at the girls at all. He didn't look at any of the girls. He was looking up the whole time. So that, okay. He's looking at this. He's not looking at the girls. But this is a room full of young men, and he's a chashuva. He won't look at anybody. He's looking up at the sky, at the ceiling. He doesn't want anyone to think he's talking to them. They shouldn't feel bad. So it's very difficult to be one to give tochacha. But if you receive it, it's a big madrega to accept it and receive it happily. The list continues. A person shouldn't be arrogant with his learning, of course. If you're arrogant with your learning, then it's going to defeat your ability to acquire learning, whether it's Semech Behara, Megis Liba Behara, any of those, Semech Megis Liba Talmud, I'm sorry, Semech Behara, any of these things are going to interfere with his ability to learn. Noise Ba'om Chaveiro, empathy. Again, empathy is something that's classic. It crosses all lines of interactions with people. You have to have empathy with people. You have to carry with them. And again, so what does this have to do with Torah? Why is this in the list of Torah? Why is Noise Ba'oil necessary to acquire Torah? And I suspect it goes back to what we said before. It's like Oiva Sabrius. Torah isn't just a subject matter. It's so important to care for people, have empathy with people, that if you don't, so what kind of Torah scholar? That's what Torah is. Torah is someone who doesn't care about what's going on to other people. He's not a caring person. How can that be a Torah scholar? We expect certain things from someone who learns Torah, and therefore these become prerequisites to acquiring Torah. That the one who is the Torah scholar, in fact, is someone that people can embrace and respect in his interactions with people, not just with his Torah insights and scholarship.